the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now. Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
This is Earth, the year 2100. This is the headquarters of Space Patrol, and men from Earth, Mars, and Venus live and work there as guardians of peace.
Uranus must be a very dull planet. All the rock samples I've examined are quite normal.
Try some of these.
Where are they found?
In the Uranus polar region. Ambigara, it's so hot in here, we might as well be there now.
Hot poles and cold equators. Everything on Uranus is upside down, just like your inventions. See what I mean? This leak keeps falling over.
It isn't a leak. It's a plant from Uranus.
Well, it looks like a leak.
It's getting hotter.
The air conditioner's out of order.
Do you ever know such a thing? The scientific headquarters of the United Galactic Organization, and we can't get the air conditioning to work properly.
Well, that's life for you, Pop.
There, how careless you are. You've knocked the plant over again.
I didn't touch it.
Well, it didn't get there by itself. Pick it up, pick it up. Most interesting.
I wish you'd send me to Uranus, Colonel.
I can't spare you. The round trip would take 6 months.
There. That's the last rock examined. I'll take my report and send it to Colonel Rayburn.
Have you tested the two rocks over there?
No. But why did you move them? You've no right to touch the samples.
I put them on the plant to stop it from falling over.
Well, give the rocks to me. Hurry now.
Gone again. Where can it be?
What's gone?
The plant. Ah, there it is. Oh!
What's the matter?
It scratched me.
Not on your life.
But it did scratch me.
Then bathe your hand in ultraviolet rays. It might be poisonous. Dear, 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 women in a lab are more bother than they're worth.
I'm as germ-free as a... Oh, the leak moved.
Nonsense.
It did. Look at it.
You need a rest, me child.
But it's true. There. It moved again.
If you're joking...
I'm not. Every time we stop looking at it, it walks.
Well, you may well see Space Patrol and really wonder if your ears are deceiving you in so many ways. Or maybe it harkens back to a time of simplicity, a time where things were a lot easier. And we weren't worried about the Galasphere crew and their times when they went into the mysterious plants, of course, of Uranus, or indeed had the joys of the Gabbler bird, the Gabbler dictum bird, to be honest. But as it still stands as a series that influenced heavily the creator of Babylon 5, J.M. Straczynski, in terms of his work, let's find out what at least one of the Resonance Rewind team, I think the others are still actually in cryogenic cybernation rest, basically, finds out about Larry Dart and his Galasphere crew. Jared Palmer, your thoughts about this Frank Goulding directed, Roberta Lee and Arthur Provis adventure, which clearly, although owing perhaps something to Gerry Anderson, actually has nothing to do with Gerry Anderson.
Well, when I first saw this, I did think it was a Gerry Anderson project, but then I found out that, oh, it wasn't. So I think that was very interesting to see that other people were taking that idea of Super Mario Nation with the puppets, because I think this was early 60s, wasn't it?
In terms 1963, of the exactly the same year as Fireball XL5 was being released and so on. And of course, Doctor Who was running. So Space Race was very much to the fore. Actually, Gerry Anderson had worked with Roberta Lee with The Adventures of Twizzle and other areas, but they'd had a bit of a falling out and Gerry went his own way. And obviously, Roberta felt that she could do space in her own line together with Arthur Provis, who would also go on to work with Gerry Anderson. And this is what they came up with in the year 2100.
Yeah. And I think it's definitely an interesting one, but I think, for me, where I do see the powers, I see a lot of the Space Patrol things for Babylon 5 in terms of Mars because of the turbolift train. I think that was where the influence came from. And I'm thinking, did I see that in Babylon 5? And I'm thinking, okay, so that's probably where they got that idea from. I think in terms of the overall episodes, I think maybe it was these two episodes were probably either not the ones that would be high ranked or something. But I think for me, I kind of lost a lot of track in terms of the plot, and I kind of felt like it became a bit silly over time. And I did think that a lot of the effects were a bit dated now. And I do think the puppets for the 60s, I think they were all right. But I think for now, I think compared to like Gerry Anderson's work, I think the puppets weren't as impressive. And I felt the voice acting was a bit hit and miss. Sometimes it was funny. Sometimes it just got on my nerves. And then I think it was episode 3 where Slim was being attacked by the plant and I couldn't just stop laughing because of how ridiculous it was. But I think overall, I think maybe I just need another couple of episodes into this series. But I think for me, it could have been better, personally.
Well, it does grow on one, a bit like the plant in many ways, or indeed the leeks. As I say, I'd never been attacked by leeks before, as Husky would say with his Martian scenario. Slim, of course, is captured by the leaks, and I have to rush away to sort the whole thing through. Let's not forget, of course, the wonderful sexism that's inherent, I say wonderful in an ironic sense there, with respect to Professor Hegarty and his daughter. Don't call me Pop!
I love that line, that was funny.
I mean, the whole essence of what we had there with, of course, moving plots. I mean, you could say echoing the Triffids of John Wyndham's world, of course, which were a little bit more threatening, it has to be said, I think. Maybe, obviously, because it targeted a different market than these particular plants from Uranus.
Yeah, I think it was interesting because I don't really expect any plant life to grow on that planet. So it was a bit of an interesting choice to choose that one. And I was thinking more of this one would be a more of exploration and then like the plants like start to take over, but then like nope, the plants are just attacking them and it's just so funny.
However, in an interesting nod in the direction conceivably of Star Trek and optimism, the translation of the plants with a view to obviously going there and making friends with the plants. So who knows what in this particular Space Patrol dimension could actually lead from that post the year 2100.
That's true.
Using the Gallosphere, of course, as a meson-powered spaceship that whirls through the solar system. I think actually it's interesting that obviously the crew do go into suspended animation and the ship is then handed over to the control of robots, who obviously sort of wander along backwards and forwards in a shot, which I think is used consistently throughout the entire series. Again, it does bode for repeated viewing. I have to ask you, Jared, did you watch this as the colorized version, which is available obviously via YouTube, or were you a true soul who basically said, no, I've got to watch it in its original monochrome magic?
So I think the YouTube links you sent me, they were in color, but I did think for its time that it was probably aired in black and white. So I wouldn't mind watching it. It's just that I think I didn't realize that at the time that it was broadcasted in color, but I presume that a lot of TVs back and then color wasn't as revolutionary as later on into the 70s.
I think the series was originally made in black and white. The colorized version is what a lot of people have done, retrofitting the whole thing. And it was one of those things that rather than actually invite you to purchase the whole thing from Amazon, I felt it was probably only right that you actually looked at it as a sort of colorized aspect. Although, as I say, if you want to go for the completist, you can purchase it in full high definition and sort of experience even more wonderment for Rick and Slim and Husky, of course, the Earthman, the Venusian and the Martian, who, of course, neatly crossing over, of course, after the adventures and the trauma of the dark planet, which clearly was referring to Uranus. Interesting, they're using that pronunciation, which I've used here, as opposed to Uranus, for obvious reasons. And if anybody can actually get through the whole process without actually having a phenomenal moment, well, congratulations, because I certainly can't. In terms of the next adventure, though, we get even more wonderment because, of course, Husky, our Martian friend, arrives back, not just just in time, but with, of course, a gabbler dumbbird, who basically does a whole range of gabbling scenarios from that point of view. That's before they go off to Jupiter to investigate the missing scientists who also gone off to there. They're captured by the Neptunes, who are obviously always on the lookout for, quote, more stupid Earthmen.
Yeah, I did think that one was quite fun. I think that out of the two of them, I think episode four I did prefer, just because I think I did like the idea of using the conventions of the aliens trying to take over humanity, trying to, like, I would say maybe just get rid of the human race. And I think for me that I think the sci-fi zone of and science fiction itself has always been, when it comes to aliens, is, are aliens a threat? Is extraterrestrial going to take us, like, either to the stars, or is it going to, like, make us cease to exist? So it's an interesting play in there. And I think for the early 60s, of course, seeing that play out, because I think for me, when I've watched some of the Doctor Who episodes with the William Hartnell, I definitely do see a lot of the thematic sort of, like, similarities between both episodes. And I think for me, it was interesting to see the puppets a little bit more, because I think even though it was in color, though, sometimes in the Thunderbird ones and Captain Scott, you can sometimes tell they're using the strings compared to when they're just using green screening of the
bane of Gerry Anderson's life, on a day in which the official technical manual for Fireball XL5 has been made available for the remarkably low price of $29.95. There we are, shameless plug for Jamie Anderson's area there. We certainly sort of find that you're in a situation of how do you make it realistic and so on. And it arguably wasn't until, of course, Captain Scarlet's new adventures when Gerry effectively was able to go into hypermarionation with CGI, effectively, that they kind of went away from that. There is a charm to these, though, and I do remember, I'm not sure whether I was scared as a child while watching Space Patrol, but it was one of those things which it clearly wasn't Gerry Anderson, and it was, I think, played to a certain extent for laughs, insofar as to a child's mind, a bit like the Batman TV series, but perhaps not as camp, you were seeing a situation in which there were obviously lots of nods being made in terms of traditional stereotypes that we see manifested through the whole thing. Marla, of course, the secretary for Colonel Rayburn, and as I say, the incarnations of the crew of the Gallosphere 347. You said you liked the second one slightly better. I think that's interesting, again, in terms of how things go from that. We probably have maybe a joint mark and then a kind of individual mark. So let's go for the Dark Planet first. What would you score that? Oh, in fact, before we haven't even talked about characters, Rogerio. So, but yeah, let's hold back. Who were your favourite characters? Was it the Gabbler Dictum Bird? Was it indeed the Neptunians, who basically the mere thought of work made them go into almost a panic mode, basically? To actually do work, that's what Earthmen are for, to actually, stupid Earthmen, to actually do work for them. Although maybe they're not as stupid as perhaps they're being held up to be. Was it that one, or are you going to go down to Professor Haggerty and, of course, his daughter?
I would have to say probably for episode three, it was... Professor Haggerty's daughter. I'm trying to remember what her name was.
I think Libby Morris basically playing the name of Maria, effectively, from that side of things there.
Okay, yeah, because I think out of all the characters, she at least sounded a little bit more as if she was inside the plot. I think the rest of them with Professor Haggerty, I wasn't sure what... I understand they were where they were going with the approach, but I did think he came off a bit too strong with some of the things he said. And I think, of course, you wouldn't got away with a lot of the things he said in some of the episodes. And I think just like her winding her father up was just funny to watch for episode three. And I think for that one, she was my favorite character for episode three. But for episode four, it was Slaves of the Neptunes. I think of the Neptunes were my favorite characters, like them just plotting. And it's like, we have to destroy these stupid people. And it just made me laugh so much so, from that one.
And also the wonderful decision that the director had made to ensure that when Ernie, one of the two Neptunians actually speak, the light illuminates them, the spotlight goes on them, whilst the other Neptunian goes into complete darkness, which would make so much sense. We'd know basically if the spotlight was on when you actually spoke, then that would it'd work on that basis. So again, obviously part of the strange worlds of Neptune from that point of view, which is why thankfully we're not slaves of Neptune from that point of view and can consider our exploration to Pluto, obviously avoiding Uranus because of those dangerous plants that can be found on Uranus from that point of view. And as long as we're accompanied by Venusians like Slim and Martians like Husky, then all will be well with the world of 2100. Okay, let's go on to, Jared, your particular scores for these. Let's go to the Dark Planet first. What is your score for the Dark Planet?
I'm going to give this one a 3 because I felt like during halfway the plot sort of dipped a bit and I was a bit confused about what was going on. I think also just because I think it just the problem is when I watch something like the Batman series from Adam West, I can tell that the campiness is there. For this one, I think it took a little bit longer because I think it tried to be serious at the start and then it tried to be campy later on and I think it just didn't work. Whereas in episode 4, it was clearly a bit more in terms of the campiness. And also, I just couldn't stop laughing every time like the plants were just attacking Slim. it's just ridiculous. I think for me, I'd give that one a 3. I would give the Slaves of Neptune, be a bit more positive. I'll give it a 5 for that one, just because that one was a little bit more funnier and I was a little bit enjoying the plot for that one. But I think for both of them, I think maybe they could have just done a bit of rewriting and certain of the episodes, because I think that was the one where my attention kind of lost it a bit towards the mid for both of them.
Well, certainly the Dark Planet, I think they tried to cram in an awful lot of a potential storyline. And there was initially a thought that crossed my mind that did the talking plant, as indeed Colonel Rayburn would say, did they actually effectively react to Slim because they felt that the Earth people had actually kidnapped their child? Because we never actually found out how their child, the small baby plant, the baby Uranus occupant, had actually sort of been kidnapped away. And maybe it was a case of that, but that was never quite clear. There was a message, though, again, in terms of actually trying to communicate, and the line when Professor Haggerty's machine, which manages to convert the electrical impulses of the plant, who obviously crosses great concern when Maria says, you wouldn't like, how would you like one of your tendrils snipped? In terms of that, it's good to see again positive affirmations of the Irish culture still operating in 2100. I felt, but you know, there was an area there which was coming through. So, again, interesting time. I'm going to hold back on my particular score for both of these shows. It has created a love-hate relationship in a whole range of ways, but we'll take a break. Music, though, of course, Jared, you said you start off seriously. The percussive, the persistent percussive instruments that's actually there. How did you find that work? Because obviously a lot of electronics coming through there, again, setting that futuristic mode.
I think in terms of the sound, I think it worked all right. I think because I'm used to watching the original Doctor Who and a lot of the science fiction from the 60s, I'm used to it a little bit more. I think that's probably where the series stands out, is the music. And I think for its time, it's definitely very good, and I definitely would like to see a lot more of it now. I think as well, in terms of the style of the 60s, this is where a lot of the influences for the later science fiction genres will come on, and I could clearly see that other science fiction shows like Babylon 5, of course, would take a lot of inspiration from this. And I think seeing that together, I think ultimately, I think this is what science fiction started off as and where we see it develop to now, really.
60 years, of course, since Space Patrol was on our screens, over 60 years and from the 60s, so it echoes those kind of things there. For the moment, before we head back to some more Space Patrol, little clips, etc., and probably get some of the thoughts of some of the other Resonance Rewinders, if indeed they have recovered from the experience of going into the Galasphere, and Larry Dart, etc. Many thanks, and watch out for those plants and Neptunian mind control specialists, Jared.
This is Earth, the year 2100. This is the headquarters of Space Patrol, and men from Earth, Mars, and Venus live and work there as guardians of peace.
Where in space can Husky be? He was due back from leave this morning.
Perhaps he missed the flight from Mars. Ah, here he is.
Sorry I'm late.
What's that noise?
The bird I brought back with me. Tweet, 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 tweet. Come in, my pretty one.
Good gracious. What is it?
A gabbler dictum.
A gabbler what?
A gabbler dictum. He's a Martian parrot.
Will Captain Dart report to Colonel Rayburn?
Take care of Gabler while I'm gone.
That's not his name.
It is now. He talks even more than a woman.
This year, three spaceships going to Pluto have disappeared.
Do you want me to look for them?
I tell you, they've disappeared. All I want you to do is to patrol space between Uranus and Pluto and see if you can find anything going on.
Those stupid Earth people don't know what is happening to their ships.
It would be amusing to call their space headquarters and tell them.
It is better if they don't know. What is that?
I will go and see.
It is a pity I cannot have Colonel Rayburn here. It would be amusing to teach him to obey me.
My lord, our observatory has sighted another colonist ship.
Excellent. You know what you have to do?
Yes, Tyro.
Then do it at once.
I wish you could make him stop talking.
I can't. He doesn't understand me.
Get ready for takeoff, boys.
Can I bring Gabler with me?
You know the rules, Husky. Animals and birds aren't allowed in spaceships.
But I can't leave him, Captain. He'll be lonely without me.
You'll have to write him a letter.
He can't read.
Then send him to school.
What a wonderful idea. I'll ask Professor Haggerty if he knows of a school for birds. Come on, Gabler.
Husky, I was only joking. Come back. You know, Slim, Husky and the Gabler dictum make a good pair. They've both got bird brains.
Will the crew of Galasphere 347 go to contamination control and prepare for takeoff?
We're on our way, Marla.
Sure and all, it's strange you should have brought me a bird just when I'm experimenting with this.
What is it?
A bird song translating machine.
Oh, wonderful. Perhaps you can teach Gabler to speak English.
Certainly I can. Be quiet now. Be quiet, I say. That's better. By the time you return to Earth, he'll be talking better English than you.
How will you do it?
I'll insert electrodes in his brain. If he's got a brain, that is.
Of course he's got a brain. But tell me, Professor, these electrode things won't hurt him, will they?
No, 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 no. He won't feel a thing.
Good. Goodbye, Gabler. I'll be seeing you soon.
Unit gaining speed. All in order. ready to lift.
Takeoff program starting now.
Speed 5,000 miles an hour rising. Space velocity maintained.
It's time we were moving into the freezer. Go on, boys. Galasphere 347 calling control. We're going into the freezer. I'm setting automatic time control to operate for 12 weeks.
Message received. If an emergency arises, we'll use the Zergon ray to switch off your time control.
Now then, Gabbler, let's see if you understand me. This is a pencil. A pencil. Now then, tell me what it is.
Grumaclum!
No. It's not a Grumaclum. It's a pencil. Say it after me. Pencil. Pencil.
Grumaclum! Grumaclum!
You'll never be able to teach him anything, Pop. That machine of yours won't work.
My machine will work. And don't call me Pop. No, come on, Gabbler. Grumaclum. I mean pencil.
Now he won't say anything.
He's a very unintelligent bird.
Poor little thing. Don't look so upset. I bet that's the first bird that's ever given a wolf whistle.
Maybe he's not so dumb after all. I think I'll make an adjustment to me machine. I just know I can make birds talk in a human way, and I'll keep trying till I do.
This is indeed calamitous. I'll acquaint Colonel Rayburn immediately.
Yes, Marla?
Galactic Control has reported that a colonist ship going to Pluto has gone off course and is not answering any radio signals.
How many colonists are aboard?
1,000. It is moving towards Neptune.
Are we managing to keep track of it on the sonar beam?
Yes, sir.
The other ships that disappeared behaved in exactly the same way. They changed course, their radio stopped, and then they vanished. You'd better signal Dart to go and investigate.
Time control is off.
We must be near Uranus.
I don't think so. The Zergon ray's been switched on. I'll check with Earth and see what's wrong.
Sounds as if there's trouble.
A colonist ship on the way to Pluto has changed course and is heading for Neptune. Find it and see what's wrong.
Yes, Colonel. Boost the mesen power, Slim.
Very good, Captain.
I have grave news, Colonel. The colonist ship has disappeared completely.
Get Dart for me.
Central Control calling Galasphere 347.
Galasphere 347 receiving you.
We've lost track of the colonist's ship.
Has it blown up?
If it had, we'd have seen the explosion on the sonar beam.
What do you want me to do?
Keep on the same course and watch for anything suspicious.
Yes, Colonel.
And whatever you do, stay away from Neptune.
Why must we stay away from Neptune?
Because it's thousands of years more advanced than we are. And they don't want anything to do with us.
Captain, there's something on the screen.
It's the colonist ship. So Rayburn was right. It didn't blow up.
Then why isn't it showing on the sonar beam?
We'll soon find out. Increase speed, Slim. I want to get closer.
The colonists have increased speed, too.
I better try and contact them. Galasphere 347 calling colonists. Come in, please. There's no answer.
Maybe they're dead.
Then how did the ship gain speed?
Perhaps an alien force has boarded it.
I'll call Earth and... That's funny. I feel dizzy.
So do I.
Me too.
Galasphere 347 calling Earth.
K
Captain Dart is on the sonar beam.
Well, we've heard Jared Palmer's views on Space Patrol and its interesting pioneering sense of the adventures of space for obviously slightly younger adults. Although if you're dealing with plants on Uranus and indeed slaves of Neptune, maybe you are a stupid Earthman, as we've said many a time. Let's find out what Anna Teodora Koskinol makes of this from a Romanian perspective. Anna, your thoughts on Space Patrol? Had you ever seen it before?
No, Alex, I haven't. It was my first time, and I think my second time watching a puppet show, marionette show. And I think it's really nice because, as you said, young adults may not be that interested in these kind of things, but with a good plot, they are quite easy to follow, and I don't know, they make for a day.
So, in terms of the actual piece itself, what did you make of, I mean, did you have any favourite moments, first and foremost, from what you've seen? Because you've had a look at the Dark Planet, and you've begun to look and investigate at Slaves of Neptune. What are your kind of thoughts about the year 2100 and, of course, the adventuresome people of Space Patrol from Venus, from Mars, from Earth, and so on?
Not that my favorite moments. I think one thing that I like most was the way that in the first episode they the marionettes interacted with each other, because the way they, I don't know, they helped each other and they were developing a friendship, especially with the captain, because as a captain you have to have that authority. And the way that I don't remember the Husky's name, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have Husky.
Yeah, he was basically a crew member, but he was also friend with the captain. And I like that thing that you could see that even in a marionette that basically can't really express emotions, they were able to develop some sort of friendship as well as with Venus.
Yes, indeed. There was a camaraderie that was about there. What did you make of the Irish professor and, of course, his ever-teasing daughter?
I cannot say that he was especially my favorite, but he was quite funny. He was actually, I think he was not the hardest to follow, but maybe the one that was the most unexpected.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the more one looks at it, the more amused one gets by the actual system. I mean, I'm not sure how it was ever made to be taken seriously. I mean, maybe it was. Actually, to a certain extent, some of the themes were quite interesting and packed into, as I say, a 25-minute particular piece from that point of view. What did you make of the notion that actually, once they could actually find out a way and Professor Haggerty could actually determine a way to actually communicate with the plants, then maybe the adult plants on Uranus would effectively become friends as opposed to trying to kidnap Slim and such like?
I think, to be honest, I think that it was a genius idea to write it that way and to think of making more friends with plants and going to a plan B rather than following the first, not exactly the first plan, but the plan of kidnapping and going through all that trouble rather than, and then going back to, hey, we could make some friends, we could talk to them and we can turn them alive and see what goes on from there.
I mean, interestingly enough, there is a kind of science that comes into place there, because they do obviously wear space suits when they go outside. Clearly, the notion of actually having the kind of Martian or Venusian life or indeed Neptunian life is remote from that point of view. And of course, it's set in the not too distant future now, of course, 2100, literally the end of this century, when we'd actually sort of come around to that side of things there. Is it a world in which you'd like to live, Anna, or is it a case of, oh, I don't know?
I think I would love to live in that world. And I think we should all want to aspire to, I don't know, escape from this reality right now, in this moment, and to just dive in that world and just make the most of it and have fun.
Of course, we did also see some interesting sort of characters, or at least not so much characters, but technology side of things, not only with the Galasphere, but also with, of course, the robots who would clearly look after the ship whilst the crew were actually in suspended animation and were doing their own particular line as well, which I thought was quite interesting. Do you think it would actually transfer to a live action version? There was actually an American TV series called Space Patrol, which had nothing to do with this particular thing, which is why this often had its name changed to Planet Patrol in certain instances.
I saw that. I actually read about that, that they were all the time getting confused between those two. I don't know, because it's quite nice and special this way. And I think people nowadays have this thing of remaking older versions of things and trying to make them more futuristic and maybe more, I don't know, to this day. And basically they lose all the essence because nowadays you wouldn't be able to make certain jokes or do certain actions that in 1963, you were able to do them freely and could actually have fun. So I think we should stick to this version and enjoy it and maybe make it even more popular than it is now, rather than making a live action of it.
Yes, I think certainly you're absolutely right in terms of some of the comments with respect to the women in this particular role would create a huge amount of issues with respect to contemporary audiences. And some might say quite rightly so, too. What about things such as the music? I mean, I thought it actually was a very serious, I used the term with Jared earlier, percussive beat with respect to this. And there's that kind of consistent kind of dee 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 dee, which is almost hypnotic in its own way, etc. Did you feel as though it was quite an interesting way of suggesting a futuristic mise-en-scene?
Orchestra is, I think it's quite good and quite happily, let's call it, rather than something that's serious and makes you go into an action that, and makes you film off and makes you think of an action film and movie. It's something I hold it, I read it's called something as Ramp Patrouille, if I'm not wrong. Yeah, and even the name makes you happy.
Yeah, I suppose so, from that point of view. So who would be your favorite characters or character, and do you have any honorable mentions?
I think I would have went for Husky because, to be honest, I really liked his name and his appearance in the first episode. But I think I'm going to go with Captain Larry because even the actor behind everything, I think it's quite hard when you're the actor behind a marionette to be able to show all those emotions through only a puppet and to be able to do so many things. So I'm going to go with Larry as being my favorite character, but all of them were really good and all the voices behind them I think were really interesting and I don't know, quite good, and they were sending in emotions and making you feel the action.
Yes, Larry Dart, of course, voiced by Dick Bosborough. The character, the puppet, of course, having a beard. I don't think he had too many puppets who actually had beards in those days, but so that was quite interesting. I probably want to throw in something for the Gabbler Dictum Bird, who obviously is the blah, 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 blah character that's brought on board as a Martian parrot from Husky in the Slaves of Neptune. Okay, let's start going down the numbers game then. Again, we haven't had it as a team collective here. Obviously, our team Resonance Rewinders have been doing it on a separate basis, as I say, a sort of serial one-by-one thing. So what, Anna, would you say would be your score for... I mean, I was going to say we could do what Jared did and give a score for each episode, or you can do a combined score. What would you like?
I would give a combined score. And I'm going to say, because I like it, but a marionette show, I can't say it's what I would watch on a daily basis, but this was really good written and produced. I would say 7.9.
The highest of all as yet. So well done, 7.9. Very high from that point of view. We had Jared, of course, with a 3 and a 5. But obviously building up on that side of things there, I'm probably about a 6 or 7 really from that point of view. I think it's got promise, it's got charm, it's got something which is worth it. Interesting, presumably did you watch it via the YouTube colorized version or have you gone for the original black and white?
No, I went for the YouTube colorized version because it was the online free one. But I think Jared would give it a higher score, and everyone would give it a higher score if they were able to produce more episodes of it. It was a shame that it was stopped, but
Well, yeah, there were, I think, over 39 episodes, or I think
yeah,
there were
they were
39.
39, I
Yeah,
read.
39. So a fair number there, and maybe I say people fell more in love with Gerry Anderson's work with Fireball XL5, Stingray, Thunderbirds, and the other Ranger things there.
What's wrong with us?
I don't know. I was talking to Rayburn and then everything went blank. Gallosphere 347 calling Earth.
You're wasting time. Our transmitters are dead.
No wonder. The electromagnetic field is switched on around our Gallosphere. No radio beam can get through that.
Who switched it on?
I don't know.
Well, switch it off. That's better. Now, I'll try and.
The switch, Husky.
What switch?
Turn on.
Oh, tired.
You must. Quick.
All right.
What's the matter with me? I keep feeling dizzy. Husky. The radio's still dead. I thought I told you to turn off the electromagnetic field.
Sorry.
No. Leave it on. It's stopping us from being hypnotized.
What?
Yes, Captain. When the magnetic field is on around our galosphere, no hypnotic thoughts can get through. But when it is off, the thought waves come in and take command.
Do you think that's what happened to the colonists?
Yes.
That reminds me, where are they?
I'll go to the observation window. When the magnetic field is on, the screens don't work.
If those colonists are heading for Neptune, that means the Neptunians are doing the hypnotizing.
I'm sure they are. They hate work and only use slaves.
I'm not going to let them make slaves of us. Where's the ship, Husky?
Still heading for Neptune.
You know, we were looking through our records and we found that the first time we actually featured Space Patrol, as far as Resonance Rewind was concerned, with the Swamps of Jupiter. And the very first episode was with Jenny Bill and Kathy Manso. That was on February the 16th, 2022. So Jessica Burtis wasn't actually able to join us on that particular show, but thankfully, now that we've actually heard from Jared, we've heard from Anna, we can finally get the North Carolina considered viewpoint on the adventures of Slim, Larry, Husky, the Gabbler Dictum Bird, what's not to love, and those Neptunians who basically are shocked. How can we do work without any slaves? It's just terrible in all sorts of ways. Jessica, let's start off with the Dark Planet, that particular episode of Space Patrol. What did you make of it?
So I really liked this episode, and I kind of went in not knowing much of anything. I remembered the name Space Patrol because I think even though I wasn't there for the episode, I remembered the Swamps of Jupiter. It felt a bit familiar, but I didn't remember the characters. So it was nice getting to kind of see this new world, and it did remind me a bit of another show that we had watched that I can't remember the name of quite right now, but another
Fireball
marionette.
XL5, perhaps?
It could be. It's another space marionette. Show, and I actually really enjoyed it. I'm always a bit hesitant when it comes to shows with marionettes and puppets, but I actually really enjoyed the episode. I don't know if it's because I have a personal interest in just that sci-fi idea of living plants and carnivorous plants. I think you see it repeated in sci-fi works a lot because it is just an interesting concept. And we have such crazy plants like Venus flytraps, which I have to say are native to the Carolinas. And North Carolina has a state carnivorous plant, and that is
So I thought this episode was really fun and amusing. And I liked the different perspectives on the ethics around having a plant that might be a baby that's a bit sentient, and can you experiment on this plant? And then being on the planet and having to deal with having an aggressor that they didn't really ever know how to handle, that they hadn't encountered before. So I actually really liked it. I thought it was a very kooky, chaotic time. I loved all the different accents happening. I liked getting to kind of understand and cobble together what the world was before I read a summary of the organization and the sci-fi world that was happening at the time. So I had fun with it. I think I also just love interplanetary sci-fi where you've got people from Venus and Mars and Earth, and it's just a fun time.
And Neptune as well, obviously in the Slaves of Neptune, which we'll go on to consider. You're clear at present you're in Ireland, so I've got to ask the question. Professor Haggerty and his daughter, don't call me Pops, as I've said many a times. I mean, on one level, when one watches it these days, it's almost impossible not to smile with respect to some of the, I suspect, almost deliberate approaches that they actually talk about, you know, spacemen on Uranus, which again is just strangely amusing, and I'm sure people would have lots of just actually dealing with that line alone from that point of view. But again, you've pointed out a number of key aspects there, which of course that notion of sentient plant, etc., and how would you like one of your tendrils played with, basically, you know, very critical on that sort of basis. Did you have any favorite moments from The Dark Planet? Did you have any favorite moments from The Dark Planet?
Yeah, I loved getting to see the discussions between Cassiopeia and her father around the plant and her just defending the plant and being like, I'm not going to move. I'm not going to let you experiment on this plant. What if it's alive? What if it's a baby? So I thought that was actually a really cool thing to see. And I like whenever shows have characters that have opposing moral positions. I like that you get to kind of see that in this. And of course, I loved all the soup jokes at the end, with the onion and leek, and that was clever. I thought it was very funny.
So let's move on to the slaves of Neptune, of course, those Neptunians who clearly are wishing to possess Earthmen by their hypnotic rays and so on, just to actually get a group of staff who actually work for them for that line. What were your thoughts on this one?
So I do think I like the Dark Planet more, but I did find the Slaves of Neptune very interesting because we weren't really on a planet for it. They were taking place in the spaceships. And just the portrayal of people from Neptune, or the leaders as being these very the other people from Venus and Mars, they looked very human-like. And then you have the people from Neptune that looked very they're very ghoulish. And I thought that was interesting. It was a far cry from the way that the others were acting. And you know, I don't know, seeing Neptune portrayed as a villainous planet. Neptune has always been my favorite planet, so I was like, oh no, they're slandering Neptune's name. But it was it made me curious about the world building and how Neptune functions. Is this just a new thing that they started abducting colonists to use them as slaves? And the idea of a planet abducting spaceships to bring them down to use them as slaves was, I thought, a really interesting idea. And I wonder if they ever explore it further in the show because it's a very devious plot. And it was interesting seeing the characters try to figure out how to get around the days and mind control. So I feel like it was very different from the Dark Planet, but it was a lot more, well, maybe not a lot more perilous, but still very high stakes for these marionette puppets.
Yeah, Larry Dart, of course, Slim and Husky. And your thoughts on the Gabbledickdon bird, who again emerges frequently throughout the series, in terms of the sort of sequence. I mean, that was somebody which, again, one's particularly thinking, what?
Yeah, when they brought the bird on, I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, this is a it's gonna be I didn't realize that it was like a thing that recurred throughout the series until it was actually part of the Wikipedia page, and I was like, oh, it sticks around. I thought it was interesting. I don't know what that had to have been some random addition. I do not understand how it plays into it, but I feel like as a child, I would have found it really entertaining and hilarious. So maybe it works for kids and they find it super funny. But yeah, looking at it, I was confused.
Sort of like a Martian parrot, as we hear from that point of view, the equivalent of a Martian parrot, which is extraordinary. I think obviously you'd not be surprised that Professor Hegarty also gets to experiment on the Gabler Dictum bird as well, despite his daughter's protestations. He just can't, the scientist's got to sort of get his probes and various other aspects in there. Again, favorite moment from Slaves of Neptune.
I think honestly, seeing the Neptune leaders running around, or that table that they have and their shiny robes and just talking about the colonist ships was very amusing because they're just so creepy looking. I can't imagine what it was like to just like come across that marionette puppet at night, you know, if they stumbled on it. But I think my favorite scene has to be seeing the rocket ship coming out of the ground from its little silo. That's the cutest little rocket ship I've ever seen. I love the tiny model sets, and it was so cute. I know it was meant to be a very scary moment, but I was just like, oh my goodness, this is so adorable.
I mean, did you watch the shows in the colorized version, i.e. the updated colorized version, or did you watch it in the original black and white? Because I think in the original black and white, again, they're even more spookier in terms of those Neptunians.
That is true. I did watch it in the colorized version, but yeah, the black and white makes it look like one of those creature features from the 30s a little bit. Very spooky.
Okay, favorite characters, and we can do a kind of combined thing here. Who would you favorite characters and or honorable mentions be from the shows?
I think honorable mention is the plant. I thought the plant was really adorable. The baby. I don't know what becomes of it. Do they return the ba like what do they do with the baby? I
Well,
don't know.
as we discussed with Anna, I wasn't really quite sure whether, on the one hand, the reason possibly that Slim was actually captured by the parent plants was maybe it was reprisal. That if you obviously take
Exactly.
a baby plant, they would also say, "Well, take one of yours." And there was that ending that if they can communicate, they can maybe sort this thing through.
Exactly. I thought my first instinct was, oh, it's gonna be a thing where they want the baby. But then they just never returned the baby and they were like, let's shoot them. And I was like, what? Is this the military? Like what? But yeah, I think we need a part two where they return the baby because I need to know what's going on. I'm sure Cassiopeia is gonna be pampering that baby and trying to keep it away from her father. But yeah, we need some updates about that. But I do think Cassiopeia was my favorite character because she was just the moral stronghold of the episodes, I think. She really stood her ground with her father, and I think the organization could be in some moral dilemmas if she wasn't there to be a bulwark against her father's mad science. So I think she definitely earns it.
It's perhaps more productive and more assertive than Marla, Colonel Rayburn's secretary, who again doesn't really seem to do a great deal, apart from obviously say that the Gallosphere is actually trying to get in contact with them once again. Okay, so marks out of 10, first of all, for the Dark Planet.
I am going to give the Dark Planet 9 out of 10. I really enjoyed it, and like I said, it just played into the sci-fi plots I enjoy. So I didn't really have a problem with it, except that one point off for no closure with the baby plant. I feel like we do need some closure on that.
Yes, Jared felt there was far too much packed into the thing, which is why he was somewhat sort of scathing in terms of that. Although this is a series which, again, as we pointed out, J.M. Straczynski was highly influenced by when he went on to do Babylon 5. So again, an interesting connection there. Maybe it was a series that influenced him as a child. And your mark for Slaves of Neptune.
I'm going to give that one a 7, because I don't think it was. I think I enjoyed the first one a lot more. So we started off very strong. But I do have to, I would give it probably a 6.5, but I do have to give it a 0.5 because I thought the costuming on the Neptunians was really cool. It was very, very sci-fi, very celestial looking. So I did enjoy that.
Well, as we said earlier in the program, next up, as far as Resonance Rewind is concerned, we're into again epic space drama, a whole set of world building based on the Frank Herbert classic, of course, not the latest incarnation, but the David Lynch incarnation of Dune from 1984.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Tough, but hopefully rewarding. And until then, as we seek our own Kwisatz Haderach, as we said earlier, keep on resonating.
ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
8, 7, 6.
Commencing countdown, engines on.
3, 2.
Check ignition and may God's love be with you.